We're in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 24. We're in a bit of a transition of content and subject matter, but it all kind of flows together like this. It's like, you know, Paul is just dragging us through this, you know, brought us to the first few chapters of theology, the first three chapters, and now these last three chapters, chapters 4, 5, and 6, are kind of the practical outliving of the doctrine that he showed us. You're the man, dude. Thanks. So, I was reading a book this week. It's called, what was the name of it? Simple Theology for New Theologians. So I get this book. I have to read it for school. And I'm looking at it like, and it's tiny. I'm like, I'm a new theologian. I've been doing this for years, right? And it's simple? Come on, man. I'm way beyond simple, right? So I open this book up and I start reading. There's almost no doctrine in it at all. It is literally addresses the very attitude that I had when I opened that book, that theology is not simple in any way. And that your attitude when approaching theology should be humble. And I was like, oh. So the book, I open the book, like, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm going to breeze through this book. It's like 100 pages, tiny little book, simple theology. And then he's like, if you approach this book like that, you've got bad theology. Because theology, his point is this, theology is not up here. It starts here, or it starts here. It starts with faith, it starts with knowledge. But theology becomes active. What you believe about God happens. Okay, I'll give you an example. Your understanding about how God behaves when an infant dies will impact the way you and your wife or you and your husband manage the losing a child. So we all have a theology. Everybody practices theology. Everybody has a thought about God. Even atheists have theology. Their theology is bad, and their theology is that there is no God. It's a poor theology, but it nonetheless is, and they practice it. So theology is best understood or best applied when it's applied, when it's lived, when it's practiced. That's what theology becomes, what it really is. So, and that begins with humility. And that is where we ended last week's text, is submitting to one another, having this attitude of humility. And then Paul transitions into verse 22 and starts talking about wives. And then verse 25, we'll talk about husbands. So this week, we're just talking about the wives. Okay? Next week, we're going to talk about the husbands, and then we'll blend them together into this, what I think Paul kind of illustrates as a beautiful, Christ-centered, godly marriage. So, if the question of why this is important, right? Why is this important? Or why do I need to hear this? Paul begins in verse 22. Follow me. He says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. Why do wives need to hear this? Why do men need to hear this? Why does the church need to hear this? What is our why? Why do we need this? Why should I keep listening? I'll give you one reason. Number one, it establishes our theology, and that theology establishes our practice. Number two, it's a command from the Lord. And so we have to obey it. And if we don't obey it, it's sin. So it's that simple, okay? But for some people, that's not enough. So I'm going to give you more whys. There's blessing when a wife submits to her husband. There's a blessing that comes with it. There is a reward on earth, and there is an eternal benefit to the obedience to God's commands. So there's lots of whys for why a wife should submit to her husband. In the first century Ephesus, this idea that wives should submit to their husbands was not nearly as rejected as it is today. So first century Ephesus, now there was sin there, there were problems there, there were plenty of wives not submitting. It was a different culture. And though there were a lot of sins that were related to marriage were going on just as much then, almost as they are now, there's still just a different concept about the way women behaved, especially in marriage, because wives back then didn't have the privileges or the rights that women have now, you know? And so wives tended to, 2,000 years ago, Asia Minor, you know, this whole area, most of these letters are written there, and so this people who are circulating this letter from Ephesus to the Ephesians from Paul are going to read this, and what they're used to is wives who tend to stay home. Like I said, there were wives who didn't, and so wives tended to stay home, and then there were some wives who didn't. And now I'm not condemning either staying home or going to work, okay? But there was more common then than it is now. We have way more women working now than they did in Ephesus at that time because women stayed home with the family and the kids and the husbands went and provided for the family. And so America, 80 years ago, and Ephesus, 2,000 years ago, very similar in regards to a wife's submissiveness in the way, in her role in the family. So prior to World War II, wives were expected to stay home. Okay? They were expected to stay home. And they would tend to the family's needs. But then in 1939, World War II began. And after America joined the war in December 1941, after the attack on Pearl Harbor, what happened? Men left. They went to war. In droves. They just disappeared off the face of America. Leaving behind their wives to do, number one, keep the home as they were already doing, but now they also have to provide for their family. And so women left the home to go to work. They had to provide for the family. Not only that, but there was another motivation for these women going to work. The military needed weapons. They needed ammunition and vehicles and supplies, and so factories that were once filled with men are now empty, and women came in and filled it because the government put up this propaganda, okay? You know that picture, right? It looks very familiar to you. Notice what this picture is doing. It is masculating the female, right? Now, I don't know what the motivation is. I think Satan had a motivation behind him, but when the government is pushing women to, you know, we can show up at the factory, we can do the work, we can be the men, okay? I'm not, like I said, I'm not condoning women working. I'm condoning the change in our perception of the sexes that happened, and I think in America was significant in 1940s, early 1940s. So notice how this picture masculates the sex of a woman and subtly giving them permission to challenge their role as helpmeet to their husband. And to be honest, some women didn't have a choice. They just didn't have a choice. They had to work. They had to work. But it created this whole misconception about roles because the husband's role was vacated. He left. He went to war. Some of those men didn't have a choice to go to war. Right? So I'm not condemning the men and the women who did these things. I'm just telling you what happened. And so the husbands left, the provider left, the protector left, and the woman stepped in, the wife stepped in, and she became the provider, the protector, supplier of the family's needs while the husband was gone. So this image and its accompanying propaganda produced a change in the roles of wives in America, big time. Because, and we can't just blame this picture, we have to blame sin, right? It's not this picture's fault. This picture's just a piece of art that didn't change the world, okay? It's sin and people that saw an opportunity for change and used it, whether we realized or not, we used it to pursue a deep sinful passion within our sinful nature. Genesis 3:16. God punishes the woman for her sin, Eve, and he says to her, your desire, this is the beginning, this is right after sin, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. That word desires her passion to pursue him. Not, now, it sounds like it's saying that's a good thing, like she'll desire her husband. It's actually referring to her desiring his role, and he will rule over you, and there will be a battle between the roles. So part of the curse for the woman is a misappropriation of her God-given role to be the man's helpmeet. So when God punishes Eve and curses her after sinning, God is basically saying, instead of being the helpmeet, you still be the helpmeet, but now there'll be tension in the marriage that wasn't there before without sin. And now that sin exists, there'll be tension in the marriage. And the woman will desire the role of the husband. And the husband, with God's given desire to lead and rule, he'll have that, and then she'll pursue it, and he'll rule over her, and that will create division. Sin produces this problem. Christ solves it. So, it's not like every marriage is doomed because all wives are sinners and they're all going to pursue their husband's role and all men are brutish and they're all just going to rule over their wives and we're just going to have nothing but terrible marriages. No, Christ redeems marriages and God redeems people and marriages can be righteous and holy and properly roled for husbands and wives. So the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, they consume all women, all men too, okay? I'm just saying, particularly in this situation, women have that too, and in their sinful nature, they want to step into that role that God specifically reserved for men. So basically, with the induction of sin comes the erosion of order, okay? As sin comes in, order falls away. And part of the church's responsibility is to sustain, obtain, preserve, and manifest God's order. Okay. So now back to 1945, end of World War II. After the war, a new standard is set. A new mentality was established. Now moms worked. That was it. They got used to it. Moms worked, and they were good at it. They're like, I can do what men do. See, the problem is never that women are never good enough to do what men do. I mean, God made men physically stronger. So there are things that men may be better at. But there are things women are better at, right? And part of that is because God gave us specific roles. But there's a lot of things that men do that women can also do just as well or better, and that's okay. The issue is not ability. The issue is roles, okay? It's roles. It's not about having the ability or the capability of doing something better than a man. It's about filling God's given role to you. So, these daughters, these are baby boomers. Their dad's off at war. Their mom is at work. She comes home to feed them. These daughters are raised by these women who work. What do you think the daughters are going to do when they grow up? They're going to work. Baby boomers went to work. Biggest influx of working class women from that generation. Okay, and then what did the boys learn? Dad's not around. And when dad did come home from war, hit a chip on his shoulder. Okay, typically, and so then you've got boys and being raised by just their moms, not by dads. Again, it's not the dad's fault. He had to go to war. It's not mom's fault. She had to go to work. And you've got daughters and sons being raised by a mom who works. And there's not that scenario is wrong if it has to happen, but that it creates disorder and those children are raised in it. And then they grow into adulthood thinking that's the norm. And then they transition the next generation into believing, you know, women can do these things. And not that they can't. But and not that women can't go to work, but what I'm saying is that they kind of shifted the whole mentality about women's roles and about men's roles in our society. And it just changed the whole projection and whole trajectory of our culture. So, I say all that because this is now the norm in our culture. All right? It is the norm that has escalated to feminism. It is seeking to remove men from fulfilling their God-given role of provider and protector. In our culture, men are cast as an image of foolish, brute, stupid beasts. You think that's harsh? You don't think I'm serious? Turn on your television, turn on any sitcom, any single one of them. And what is the man? He's an idiot. He's a bumbling idiot. But he's funny. I mean, isn't that Satan's best tactic? Humor? If they laugh at it, they become desensitized to it because it's humorous. They accept it because it's joyful a little bit. It makes me laugh. This idiot husband's kind of funny. And then we imitate it, and we absorb it, and we learn it, and we teach our children it because we mock that behavior. And in those same sitcoms, what is the wife? She makes the decisions, she's the authority, and she's the only smart person in the entire family. Right? That's how they cast them. Okay, am I against women being smart? Of course not! You know, duh, right? I mean, so if it weren't for women, I watched this show where they had this woman who like basically was like one of the sole responsible people for getting our spaceships into space. I forgot what the movie was called. It just came out recently. It was a great movie. And this woman was awesome, and she was brilliant. And if it weren't for her, we wouldn't have half the NASA stuff that we have, right? So I'm not against those things. What we see, though, now is just this change in the way we perceive men and women, and then how those roles are acted out in the family. Okay? And so now, the norm is this. So when you test this, I say all that. So that when you tell a woman in our culture today to submit to your husband, she has a couple of responses. She could be like, okay, like I don't really get that. That's not a norm for me. I'm not rejecting it, but okay. There's no way am I submitting to him. He doesn't tell me, nobody tells me what to do. I'm my own person, you know, and there's plenty of culture that encourages that, and not that you're not your own person, but that's not the reason for the roles. And then there's the godly woman's perspective, which is, yes, I will submit to my husband, and I am my own person, you know, and I have my own identity, but my identity is mixed with my husband, and my role with my husband is a role of submission. So God establishes these ordered roles for husbands and wives from the beginning. Okay, and the culture has reversed them right under our nose. We don't even see it happening. And so from the beginning, God created these roles. And it is left to the church to redeem this manhood and womanhood to the godly order that it is. So in verse 22, when Paul says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord." The command of submission is specifically addressed to wives, and submission itself is a scary word. I mean, when we say submit, it never comes across gentle, does it? I mean, no one thinks of submit as like this very tender, loving, coming alongside and bringing you into submission. We think of MMA fighters, right? Grappling each other, punching each other in the face, dragging each other to the ground, and then one guy gets one guy on the ground, he wraps his legs around his chest, pulls his arm back, like this is called an arm bar, okay, and you bend his arm back until it's going to snap, and what is the guy whose arm is locked in the arm bar, what is he left to do? He gives the universal sign of submission. He taps out. The tap out sign. I submit, I submit, I submit, and the guy lets go of his arm. If he doesn't submit, if he doesn't tap out, his arm's going to snap. So if only guys are locked in that, and that's our perspective of submission in our culture. It's forced. That's how we see submission. But there's nothing forceful about the submission in this text. Okay? And the only force applied here is the command of God. And what Paul is saying is, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. He means, first of all, before we get there next week, this is an enjoyable, fruitful, blessed, and beloved activity for the wife to submit to her husband when he's doing verse 25. When he's doing verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, when he's doing that, she tends to have no problem submitting. It's a joy for her. It's a blessing to her because he makes it easy for her. That message comes next week. But also, if that's not enough reason, maybe your husband isn't that, then why should I submit? My husband doesn't love me as Christ of the church. What should I do then? Submit. How? As to the Lord. So what Paul's saying is, you are not, by submitting to your husband, you are submitting to the Lord. As to your husband, as to your Lord. Okay? Because the Lord commanded in 1 Corinthians 11:3 that the husband is the head of the wife. So when you submit to, when a wife submits to her husband, she's submitting to the Lord in that activity. So to not submit to your husband is to not submit to the Lord. That's sin. So there is no qualification by the husband here. His only responsibility to fill in order to be submitted to is that he is husband. Okay? Verse 25, when he talks about him being a loving husband and a respectful husband, that makes the woman's role better and easier, but there's no qualification other than he be husband. That's hard for some women to swallow, especially when there's a step friction in the marriage. It's hard. Okay? Now, we get to verse 23. Paul says, for the husband, so for, here's your reason why. Okay, why should I submit? Here's your answer. For, because the husband is the head of the wife. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11:3. For the husband is the head of the wife. That's why the wife submits, because he's the head. He's the leader. That's the role God gave men. And that is not sexist. That's not chauvinistic. That's God's biblical order. And our culture has convinced us that that's not okay. Because our society is just top notch, great, no sin involved in what our culture at all. Our society isn't thwarted or impacted by the effects of sin in any way, right? I mean, our perception of who women are is validated by some statistics about people's computer usage, right? I could pull those out and we could see how do people really view men and women and how has our culture influenced our perspective of men and women. And that would be a great tell. But the church, we're here to restore that order, to stand up for that order. So husband is the head of the wife. Therefore, that's why she submits to her husband. And he is the head of the wife, just as Christ is head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. And so that is a resemblance of the way the husband is to the wife. As Christ is the head of the church, and the church is his body, and he himself is its Savior. Those are roles that the husband fills for the wife. That he is head and lead of her, and she is the helpmeet to his goals. And he is the sacrificial lover of her soul, as Christ is to us. Now, what if my husband doesn't live that way? We'll get to that in a second. What gives us this authority to say husband is head? Because the whole concept of submitting, wife submitting to husband, is based on verse 23. The reason is the husband is the head. So why do we get this foundation, husband is the head? So my question is, so what? So what? A wife has to submit. Why do I have to listen to that? Because the husband is the head. So what? Who cares? Why are you telling me the husband is the head? What does that mean? It means that God established an order at the beginning of time. He created man first. And from man, he created woman. And the woman's purpose from the beginning was to help him meet God's will. She is the helpmeet to the husband's will. And the husband's job is to know God's will. And they meet God's will together. And she helps him do that as he is head. That is the role that God established. That was before the law. That was before the church. That is universal. That is not just for Christians. That is the role of every husband and every wife and every marriage across the world, no matter the religious affiliation or beliefs. This is the way God wanted man and woman together in marriage. However, this message is going to land way different on a non-believer than it will on a believer. So my desire is for the church, and I think Paul's thinking for the church, to be the image of the gospel. We're going to have good marriages because the marriage is a picture of the gospel. The Christ, the husband is like Christ, the wife is like the church, and she submits to him and he is the head. And when the church submits to Christ, the church does God's will and it is beautiful. And there's fruit. And God created marriage just for that purpose. And who benefits from the church obeying Christ? The church! God gets the glory, church gets the joy. So as the marriage is a picture of the gospel, the church, the wife is like the church, and the husband's like Christ, and the wife submits to the husband. Who gets the joy? The wife. And the husband. And it broadcasts the beauty of God's ordered roles of Father, Christ, husband, wife. And it displays the gospel in its best imagery. So, this is extremely important. Want an answer to one of your whys? Why? Why this? Why do I care? Why should this matter? The gospel depends on our marriages. The gospel will survive without good marriages. Okay, but God will preserve Christian marriages. I believe that. To broadcast, to display his gospel. And maybe one of the ways he preserves Christian marriages is by having people preach Ephesians 5, 22 through 30. Three. Okay? And so, my hope is that for those of you who hear, who have what you would say is a healthy and good marriage, that this would encourage you to find ways to, how can my marriage be even better? How can we work even more on our roles as husband and wife in glorifying God in our marriage and being more gospel-saturated? And, you know, and if you're thinking, my marriage isn't anything like this, my wife isn't submissive, or my husband isn't godly, or, you know, you've got all kinds of different scenarios there, we have a solution. The Bible has a solution. I have a solution for you this morning, okay? If that's you, got an answer, okay? So we move on to verse 24. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. So, the wife is to submit to her husband, not in some things, but in everything. That's a significant word there, everything, that Paul inserts everything because it changes the whole marriage relationship. She doesn't just submit to him in church. She doesn't just submit to him spiritually. If you're a reader and you're reading this, you're thinking, well, this is the Bible or a church, we're hearing this, or the church in Ephesus, they get this, they're at a meeting together, someone's reading it, like, oh, he's talking about, you know, it's Paul, he's talking about spiritual leadership. Women can lead in other things, but in the family and at the home. But in church, I mean, as far as spiritual leadership, that's what Paul's talking about. They're prone to think that. So it's very important that Paul adds this word, everything, because he's saying, wife, there is nothing in your marriage in which you take the lead. Okay? There is no aspect of your marriage in which you are the head. The husband is the head in all things, and your role is submission in all of those avenues. Everything. Financial, behavioral, raising your children, decisions on jobs and where to live. Now let's just get back up practically for a second. The husband may be the head and the wife submits, but I am telling you, I can, there are very few times in my marriage where I've had to put my foot down and be like, this is what we're doing, right? Because my desire as a husband is to love my wife in a way where we're making decisions in our oneness, that submission is not this, no, submit to me, we're doing this. It's her saying, husband, what should we do? And I say, wife, let's discuss this. And we decide together. And there's no battle for authority. There's just joyful oneness in our decision-making process. Now, if it comes down to it, and we vehemently disagree on something, okay, and I have to put the foot down, I'm going to proceed cautiously. I'll just say that, okay? I mean, it's just wise to, right? I mean, just because I have the authority to doesn't mean that that's wise to just be like, no, woman, thou shalt listen to me. I am thy Lord, you know? I mean, that just doesn't fly in my home, okay? And not because I don't have the authority to make the final decision, but I want my wife to agree. And honestly, I've learned this in my experience. If my wife says no, 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 it tends to be God telling me no, usually, okay? And so we have that in our marriage without there being a tension in our authority and submissive roles. It's to the point where it really is rarely addressed. It's just so natural because God has blessed me with that kind of wife. I'm just so grateful. So I'm just, there are practical ways to do this, okay, where men don't have to lay down the law of their authority. That is not going to produce a wife who joyfully submits. So you can see there's foundation, there's more at stake here that must happen in the background before a wife. You know, so men, let's say your wife's not here today, or let's say she is, and you guys are struggling with this, the best thing to do is not to get in the car and be like, you know what, you need to submit more. Not the way to lead that conversation, all right? She's going to be like, you're going to church next week. Verse 25, love your wife. All right, So my desire is that this would encourage marriages, conversation at home about these roles. So we get to this point now. We're at women. What about women whose husbands don't have that lead, who don't take the lead? My husband isn't spiritually providing, protecting, leading our home. Here's what happens. The wife steps in. I've seen this a gazillion times. I cannot tell you as a pastor how many times I've had women come to me, and it's okay if they do. I'm this why I'm here. So if this is you and you're a woman in this situation, please come, let's talk. But they come to me and say, I'm struggling with my kids spiritually and behaviorally, and my husband won't lead, so I'm leading the family spiritually. And I don't say it in those words, but that's what's happening. And I go, the reason there's so much disorder in the home, frustration and tension, is because the woman has stepped into his role. That's the problem. Now, the problem foundationally originally is that the husband has not filled his role. And the result of that problem is the wife steps in, and what does she do? Go back to Genesis 3:16, when God cursed Eve. Your desire will be for your husband's role, essentially. Okay? So when he vacates the role, let's go back to World War II. Husband leaves the house. What does the wife do? The curse builds up in her. She fills his role. Okay, the husband leaves spiritually. What happens? The curse rises up in her. She fills his role. When the husband doesn't step up to his spiritual leadership, the wife steps into his spiritual leadership, and she takes his role. And you might be thinking, well, somebody should. If he's not going to do it, I got to do it, because nobody's doing it. We can't have nobody doing it. This is a snowball of sin. This is a snowball effect. The husband doesn't fulfill his role, the snowball gets going. The wife sees it, doesn't fulfill her role. She leaves her role to fulfill his role. So there's two roles vacated now in the family. The husband isn't leading, and the wife isn't helping the husband meet his leadership expectations. You have two people not filling their roles in the home. Who do you think is going to suffer the most from that? Take a guess. Your children. Because though it may damage your marriage initially, for sure, it might be difficult. It'll definitely create tension and stress in the marriage, for sure. The children are going to feel the tension in the home, and they're being raised with the disorder, and they're being taught, unknowingly being taught, that that is how the order goes. So, how do we fix this? Wives, recognize a few things. Number one, that leadership role that your husband is not filling is not your responsibility. It is not your responsibility. You can be a spiritual guide in your family, absolutely. And you can pray with your children, read the Bible to them, and teach them the Bible. You know, there's so many spiritual things you can do without taking his role. But when you step into your husband's role, when a wife steps into her husband's role, the husband who has not stepped up to his role now has no role to fill. What's he going to do? Even if God does bring him back and the Lord does say, hey, dude, take your role back, and he wakes him up spiritually, and he's going to show up and go, well, there's no role. My wife's filling it. But God's given me something deep inside that tells me as the man I'm supposed to lead and take headship of this family. And now my wife has a role. And what do you think is going to happen there? Tension. Because I tell you what has happened. And I'm not kidding you, 100% of these women who I have talked to, this is my experience, who I've talked to say, I just want my husband to step up into that role. I just want my husband to step up into that role. And you know what happens when they do? Every single time, she doesn't want to leave. She says, I want my husband to be spiritual and step up into his role as leader of our home while I fill it. And then when he finally does, she doesn't want to leave. She got used to it. And then there's tension. Because what Paul's command is in verse 23 is, wives, submit to your husband in everything. So, no matter the position your husband is filling, no matter how well he does or does not fill his role, the wife's job, her responsibility, her only command here is to step back. Even if he's not in his proper role, she steps behind him and she submits in everything. Even if he's not a godly man, she submits in everything. Until he commands her to disobey the Lord, then she obeys the Lord first. But she submits to him in everything. No matter if he's filling his role or not. No matter if he's a believer or not. No matter if he's a believer not walking with the Lord. Because we look at 1 Peter chapter 3. And we get a glimpse of what this is supposed to look like. So 1 Peter chapter 3 says this, verse 1. Likewise, wives, be submissive to your own husbands. Same command. Wives, be submissive to your husbands. Same thing that Paul said in Ephesians 5. Okay? So here's the reason why the wife is submissive. Even if some do not obey the word. These are husbands not filling their roles. These are husbands not walking in God's way. These are husbands not doing what they're supposed to, not spiritually leading the home. They're not spiritually leading the family. Okay? They're not fulfilling their role. And what is Peter's command? Wives, submit. Why? So that if they don't obey the word, they may be won into their role. They may be coerced, biblically and godly way of being coerced into their appropriate role when they see your respect and pure conduct. You want to make a man feel like he's not supposed to fill his role? You disrespect him. You want to hurt a man? Disrespect him. Okay? Men need respect. For women, if you don't know this, that need you have for love, to be loved, to have your husband walk in the door with a bouquet of flowers and candy and a weekend getaway for just you two, right behind him, he says, I love you more than all the moons in the world, in the universe. It's just like super romance. As badly as you want that from your husband, he needs your respect. Now, I know, wives, you like to say things like, husband, I love you. And we love to hear it. But when my wife says, I really respect you for that, I'm like 10 times more puffed up, probably too puffed up. It's too much for me. Okay, I love it. I need it. I need to be told that she respects. I need to hear her recognize that she has a respect for me and for what I do and the efforts I put in for the family and for my spiritual leadership and my guidance. And, you know, and for her to communicate that to me is everything. But we're so used to saying, I love you. And we need to hear, men need to hear, I respect you. You know? And it's okay to go home after church and be like, you know what, husband? I was listening to Pastor Mark today. I respect you. There's nothing wrong with saying, I'm saying it because it was said this morning. I respect you. That's okay. Communicate that. Because when we don't, we create this vicious cycle of he feels disrespected, so he doesn't love you back. And because you're not feeling loved, he disrespects you. And because you disrespect him, he doesn't love you. It's just a vicious cycle. It doesn't end. Okay? It's in the Love and Respect book. They call it the vicious cycle. Okay? And so husbands need this respect. And wife, if you want to disrespect your husband, fill his role. And if you want to disrespect your husband, don't submit to him in everything. Because I tell you what, even the husband who's backed away from his spiritual leadership role, even if he's not filling his role, when you are either filling his role or not filling his role, whatever you're doing, if you're not behind him submitting to him, he has a God-given inclination, drive in every man to lead, to be the head. That's his. It's in his blood. It's in our image of God as a man. When you don't submit in everything, no matter the spiritual state of the family or him filling his role or not filling the role, you filling the role, whatever, when you don't submit to him, he feels the lack of respect and it creates tension. And what happens in Christian marriages, or at least if the wife is a Christian, that the husband's not fulfilling his role or isn't a believer, she steps into his role, tension rises even more. So here's my solution for the women who have husbands who either aren't doing their responsibilities spiritually, aren't leading the family as they should and you want them to, get out of that spiritual leadership role. Step back and then step behind him and submit to him in everything. His respect will rise. And Peter's command is, you want to win your husband into that position, you give him the biblical example of your role. He needs to see God's order, God's roles exampled for him. And when the wife takes it, he can't see it because she's playing the wrong role. But when she submits in everything, it is her pure, godly, righteous conduct and her respectfulness toward him and his leadership, no matter his spiritual position, that encourages him to fulfill his role. That is God's order. And that's God's solution. So God has an order that we destroyed, and then Peter gives us and Paul give us a solution. And then there's a solution for husbands and vice versa. So I know we're very wife-focused right now, but that's because that was the text for today. Next week we'll talk about the husband's role, but this is huge for marriages. This is huge for the church as we try to establish a gospel marriage as an image to the world of what Jesus looks like. And our marriages are like, ah! So the wife's role is to submit in everything, no matter her husband's willingness to fulfill or not fulfill his spiritual leadership role of provision and providing and protecting his family. She still submits. It doesn't mean there aren't ways that she can't provide, there aren't ways that she can't protect, there aren't ways that she can't, you know, participate in that, but she needs to submit in everything to her husband, and that respect for him will prayerfully and hopefully encourage him into his role. And not only that, within the same context, just a few verses later, in verse 12, 1 Peter 3:12, Peter says this, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous," listen to this, "and his ears are open to their prayers." You want your prayers for your husband to fill his role, to be effective? They will be best heard by God. They will be most effective. Your prayers for your husband will be most effective when you are biblically in order, in submission to your husband. That is when your prayers are most effective for him. Because what happens is the women stand up here in their position, they're filling their husband's role of spiritual authority in the house. They're like, God, why won't you answer my prayer? And God's like, because you're not obeying me. You're out of order. So wives, we get back into order. Submit to your husbands. And your prayers are more effective. And your respect for your husband is more effective. And he will. It clears a path for him to fill his role. And it opens up the picture of the gospel to the world through the church. So wives, obey this command. Submit to your husband no matter his current spiritual condition. Respect him and love him by respecting and loving God in your given role. And by obeying God and submitting to your husband. This is for your joy. This is for your joy. Yours. This is for you, wives. You will be satisfied. Like the church is satisfied in Christ, as we are in submission to him, the wife is satisfied in her husband as she is in submission to him. Your joy will catapult. Wives. I promise. That's what the Bible's telling us. It's for your joy, it's for God's glory, as we become more satisfied in our husband and thus becoming more satisfied in our God. Your husband, this is for your husband's spiritual well-being, for giving him an avenue to fulfill his role. It's for the future of your children's spiritual knowledge, their understanding of the doctrine of the marriage and the gospel, and for their just overall spiritual health. And it is for the health of the church in the midst of an extremely confused culture. Solution that comes from husbands and wives fulfilling their biblical roles. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you this morning that you have given us your grace, that you have provided for us. You provided for us a solution, even in the midst of what sin has produced, but disorder in the family. And for some of us, God, this is a hard pill to swallow. This is not easy. And like I said earlier, I pray that some of us would hear the sermon like I heard the first words in that book I read this week. If you're approaching this proud, thinking you don't need direction here, we need a reality check. Humility is key. So humble our hearts and minds to hear this truth. For wives who are struggling in their marriages with their husbands, that they would fall into submission joyfully and respect their husbands and pray for them. And I pray, God, that you would change that man's heart and his direction and all the tension that is being put up. And for the wives who are pushing back on their husbands to fulfill their roles and there's built up struggle, pray they would just release, let go, step back, step behind, enjoy their role, enjoy their husband, no matter where he's at, and be satisfied in the Lord. Pray this for the sake of the gospel and for the church. Pray this in Jesus' name.